Today's episode of Mighty Parenting is sponsored by The Great Courses Plus, which is a streaming version of something that my family has actually loved for years. The Great Courses Plus gives you 24/7 access to thousands of lectures from the world's best teachers. Now, these are professors and professionals from renowned organizations such as National Geographic, History, Smithsonian, the Mayo Clinic, the Culinary Institute of America, and more. And they teach about everything. I have a number of courses from them that I had purchased, mostly though on topics I use for work, things like emotional wellness. But I wanted something fun to enjoy during these crazy COVID times, so I started a course on cooking, which is bringing more joy to something I'm doing a lot of right now. And my oldest daughter, as soon as we got our account, she asked if they had courses on volcanoes. I sent her off to peruse the library, and shortly after, she came bounding back into the living room with a big smile on her face, listing off all the lectures she found on various volcanoes. I know that during this time of staying home, we're trying to keep our kids occupied, learning, and even keeping them out of our hair. With The Great Courses Plus, your whole family has access to reliable, fact-based courses on history, science, math, and religion. They have courses on yoga, tai chi, and other wellness topics. There are hobby and leisure courses to help you find new ways to spark creativity and enjoy this time at home, such as how to paint, play guitar, bake, do needlework, woodworking, or even perform magic. Our high school and college students can even learn new skills, from financial literacy to leadership skills to personal development and wellness skills. It's not only good for them, it's also good for their resumes as they show how they used this time in their life where they're not able to go out and work and do internships and build some of those other skills that they need for life. So, whether you're looking for something fun or creative to do, you want to keep your child learning on traditional topics, or simply want to explore, The Great Courses Plus has your back. And they're making it easy by sharing their limited time offer of 1 month free with Mighty Parents. Just visit thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting to access that. Again, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting to get your 1 month free trial. This podcast is brought to you by Versity. Versity is an organization that provides blood to hospitals in the Midwest, including Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Ohio. While all of us are familiar with blood donation, we may not know how it really helps people or how safe it is right now. Most of us are focused on managing life in a new world, but there are still people going through medical events who require blood. People undergoing cancer treatments, those with chronic health conditions, or someone having a baby may require blood, and we can help. Donating blood is always safe. Centers are regulated and required to follow medical guidelines that safeguard the donor and staff. Since coronavirus hit, additional standards have been put in place. Also, donating blood is an essential service, so you can go even if you have restrictions in your state. And we need blood. High school and college closures alone deplete donations by 20%, and each of us who donates can save 3 lives with 1 pint of blood. So, in a time where we all need a little hope, reach out and help someone by donating. In Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Ohio, go to versity.org and schedule an appointment. Outside of those areas, go to your local blood bank. Again, that's Versity, VersitySiti.org, and schedule your appointment today.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, stress relief coach, emotional wellness speaker, and host of the Mighty Parenting podcast. I am glad that you are here and listening to the podcast. You can find past episodes on your podcast player and also on mightyparenting.com, which is also a great place to share episodes. If you know someone who is perhaps not quite a podcast addict yet, And you can just send them then the URL for the show that you are on. So thank you for participating and for sharing and spreading the word about the messages that we have for parents here so we can support all of you. Here at Mighty Parenting, we talk a lot about parenting from a place of respect and connection. And to get that, that means we're going to build a strong relationship with our teenagers. So we need to listen and respect them while still being their parent. And that can be a bit of a balancing act. And helping us with that today is Hunter Clark Fields. Hunter is a mindfulness mentor, host of the Mindful Mama podcast, creator of the Mindful Parenting membership, and author of Raising Good Humans. And she helps parents to bring more calm into their daily lives and cooperation into their families, which is something we all would love to have a little bit more of. So Hunter, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you so much, Sandy. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited to talk about this today because, as I mentioned, you know, here on the podcast, we will say, these are things we need to do. And I love the idea that today you and I will be able to dig into a little bit more of how to do some of these things. And I wanted to start by asking you, when it comes to parenting today, especially that, you know, teens, tweens, 20-something ages, what's the biggest mistake you see parents making?
The biggest mistake. Well, that's an interesting question. I see a lot of, I think some of the same mistakes that we find, you know, at the young ages, we tend to repeat as we get into the teen ages. So you can see some mistakes on the playground, like, stop doing this, don't do this, you're okay, dismissing feelings, ordering around, and things like that. And we kind of do the same things, I think, with our teens. We tend to, it may all sum up into unskillful communication and also not listening, you know, not really being able to be present for our teens' feelings and their thoughts. It can be hard to listen when there's a lot of, you know, attitude coming back at you or difficulty, or they're in a different world. But we often respond to the defensively or to the attitude of what is brought to us or the surface level without kind of looking underneath and saying, well, what's really happening for my teen, and listening to maybe what's not being said as well. So I think it all of it can be brought back to that point of saying, you know, looking a little bit more deeply, looking a little bit more deeply and listening a little bit more deeply to our teens, but also that requires a capacity to be able to be still and to be present and to also listen a little bit more deeply to ourselves as well.
And also, I think a capacity to, in being present, to allow things to pass, to not allow our triggers to carry away the conversation, because nobody's better than a teenager at pushing a button in their parents.
Oh my gosh, sometimes I feel like I'm just one big button. Like, here I am, big, bright red button, waiting to be pushed. But yeah, that's true. It's like that reactivity. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like that reactivity is where we're at our worst, is when we're just kind of habit reactiveness. We're not thinking, we're not being thoughtful. And if they bring a challenge, we respond with some challenge too. We respond with a complementary behavior rather than digging a little deeper and practicing that non-reactivity. And that's really where all that the mindfulness comes in, is it's a practice for parents of being able to sit, accepting non-reactive with all the different things that arise. And that's why it becomes this superpower, I think, that we parents need.
Yeah, I like that. I like you describing that as a superpower. And we're talking about things that we need to do. I'd like to discuss a little bit what happens when we don't do this, when we don't listen, when we are very reactive, when we jump in, when we dismiss their feelings, order them around. What happens in our relationship? What happens in just the kind of the day-to-day functioning of our family?
Well, it certainly erodes the relationship. And first, I want to just kind of step back and say that to be fair to parents, that our reactivity, our feeling triggered is not really our fault, and we can often be hard on ourselves for that. But we evolved with the nervous system that we have for great reasons. It helps us to respond very quickly to threats, tightens our muscles, etc. And in these moments, our nervous system is perceiving our child as a threat, and none of us, no parents wake up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to lose it at my child at 4:30 today. Like, no one does that. This is not a conscious choice we're making. We all would love to be always sort of wonderful and calm and empathetic and respond as exactly as we'd like to do. But we are blessed with a nervous system that sees our child as a threat. And what happens when it does that is the stress response kicks in, and that part of the brain, which is the sort of more primordial part of the brain, it literally cuts off access to the upper parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is that area behind your forehead. And that's where your capacity for logic, empathy, verbal ability, higher order thinking, problem solving, all this great stuff that we would like to parent from this place, right? That actually gets bypassed so that you can be reactive when the stress response kicks in. So this is, when we talk about being reactive, I want to be careful of sounding like we're being blameful of parents, because this isn't something we've actively chosen, and it's not really our fault. Yet we can do things to take care of it. So that's kind of, I want to put in that piece for the parents. But then we can see the detrimental effects for when we are reactive, right? We react defensively to our kids or aggressively. And what really happens with, and unskillfully for sure, and what really happens when kids are teens is, you know, we kind of think of this sort of teen rebellion as a sort of normal thing, right? That all teens hate their parents when they're teens. And I don't think that's true. I think it is, of course, true that they are in this level of separation, yes. But teens are often rebelling against the unskillful and destructive ways of communicating and habits of discipline that we've had. And if we can be less reactive and respond to our kids more skillfully and more empathetically while still holding boundaries, then we have more influence. When we are more reactive, we erode our influence and they push away from us. And then we are not there. And the teen years are a time where kids really, really need us to be there. They need that influence of their parents. And if we push them away, then we're not going to be there. We're not going to be able to be there for when things are difficult for them. And that's a real shame. And I know many listener, you know, I bet, you know, perhaps you, dear listener, and I know it was for me, you can remember back to your own childhood to know what that may have been like.
And I like that you use the term unskillfully, because that just says that, hey, this is just a skill. This is something I can learn, which doesn't mean we're always going to have, you know, peace and joy and happiness the whole time that we're around our kids. But well, it does, sure. Yeah, it definitely does tell me, though, that I can learn to do things differently. I can impact the way that I interact with my child, and that will change some of that outcome. And even if they are upset or angry, which is, some of that is normal. We've had a couple of guests who have talked about how sometimes our kids just, they need to create enough friction and anger to be able to push away from their parents, which is a normal developmental milestone. And that's just part of the process for them to do that. However, it does not mean that we have to be in a constant, complete, and total battle. So you mentioned, Hunter, that we can manage our reactivity. What kinds of things can we do to manage that? So when we're in that moment, and maybe we start to feel our button getting pushed, we can do something about that physiological response of the nervous system kicking in. What do you recommend?
Well, there are things that we can do in the moment, and I'll talk about those things, but it's far better to do some things before that moment ever occurs. So for instance, just like, you know, if you went to you had a child who is in a little league game, you wouldn't just put that child at the batter's mound with ever teaching them how to hit a ball. It's the same way with this. We can't expect ourselves to respond differently in some of those moments without practice, and this is the same thing. So in those moments, what we want to do is we want to calm our reactivity. And so for me, I teach mindfulness because it's amazing. And it's an amazing way to completely side effect free, totally safe, wonderful way to lower your reactivity overall in all of your life, to decrease anxiety, decrease depression, increase feelings of well-being, increase feeling focus, and lower your reactiveness. And how it does, it's pretty amazing. They've done MRI scans of the brain, and actually an 8-week course of mindfulness meditation, practicing that daily, it actually literally changes the brain. So that primordial part of the brain that the stress response originates in is called these two little almond-shaped nodes called the amygdalae. And after this 8-week course of mindfulness, research MRI scans show that that area actually shrinks in gray matter, becomes less dense, and the connectivity between that and the rest of the brain becomes weakened. Pretty amazing. And in the MRI scans show that that prefrontal cortex, which is that thoughtful, logical part of the brain behind your forehead, that area of the brain actually grows more dense. So you're literally changing the brain. But it's kind of like going to the gym, right? We're increasing our muscle of non-reactivity. We're changing our habits. And so this is a real powerful practice for then when we get to some of those moments. So I would encourage diving into and starting a course of mindfulness meditation. It doesn't have to be much. It can be 5 minutes out of your day. So I would encourage you practicing ahead of time to lower your reactivity overall. It helps enormously. But then when you're in those moments where it's getting difficult, some of the first things to do, you want to, as things are feeling heated and you're feeling frustrated, one of the best things we can do is name it to tame it. So when we're in those moments, I'm feeling really frustrated right now, saying that. As soon as you say that, it's beautiful. Something wonderful happens. It actually provides you some relief just to say that out loud. And it is a name it to tame it experience. But what's also beautiful about that, not only have you provided some relief to yourself, you're ringing this bell of mindfulness where you can say, oh, ding, 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 ding. I'm feeling really frustrated right now. This is my nervous system is responding. This is my stress response responding, right? So I can do some things. I can take some actions now to lower my stress response. And if we, you know, think about the nervous system, we go back to those deep, slow breaths, because as soon as you take a deep, slow breath, it tells your nervous system that you have time to take a deep, slow breath. So you must be safe. You must be in a safe place where your body can relax. You can go to the washroom, take a break, splash some water on your face. You can put a hand to your heart. This is also is a nurturing thing. It helps to change our body chemistry and help us to reduce that stress response. And also you can tell yourself, I am safe. This is not an emergency. I'm helping my child, right? We can start to talk ourselves out of that stress response, right? So that then we can think more clearly. We can access that prefrontal cortex and say, none of that worked for you. And you got to the point where you're yelling and at your kid. You can try to yell more skillfully. It's possible for you to say, I'm really angry right now. Instead of, you are a blah, 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 or whatever, right? If you can yell, I'm really angry right now, and that's, again, a bell of mindfulness for you to say, okay, I need to take care of myself so that I can respond more effectively, more maturely, so I can model for my child how to take care of difficult feelings, so I can model for my child how to respond to a difficult moment, because they're watching everything you do. And so when you take these steps to say, oh, here's the stress response happening, here's this response that I'm not choosing, I can take some steps to take care of that stress response. So hopefully that's our best case scenario as we're going down that path, is that we take those moments to reverse the tracks a little bit and put ourselves into that rest and relax response in the nervous system.
And I really appreciate that in point number three, you were talking about yelling in a productive or skillful way, because we've talked about this before too, in terms of after we, to fully experience and release our emotions, especially the negative emotions, sadness, anger, and fear. And that's what we need to do with anger, right? Is it's this hot emotion that needs to get pushed out of our body. And by just yelling, I'm so angry right now, we do. It actually physically releases some of the anger from our body. And so, as you pointed out, we're not only getting ourselves some help, but helping our kids in that moment by teaching them that this is something you can do. One of the other things, Hunter, that you talk about is compassion. You mentioned it earlier in the episode, and you said that that is something that we sometimes make the mistake with our kids, is not listening to them enough, not being empathetic enough, maybe having enough compassion for them. Could you share a little bit about that?
Well, so an empathetic and compassionate response, it goes a long way to healing and connecting. When you say something to your child and they have some resistance about that, right? So say you ask your child to do something and they have some resistance about that. In that moment, they have a problem. And when somebody has a problem, then the best thing we can do for them is kind of reflect back and listen to their problem. And so, you know, if I say to my 13-year-old, you know, it's time to put your phone down. You got to stop for the end of the day, or it's time to end your screen time. I don't want to, blah, blah, blah. I know, it sucks. I hate it. I get it. You hate it. I get it. You know, if I can have a little empathy in that moment, yeah, it sucks to have to do this, but still, that's what we have to do, rather than being hard, then we can hold those boundaries in a more humane way, and makes it so our kids have less resistance to us. So it just ends up being more effective than being hard to our children. We can hold boundaries, but we can hold our boundaries kindly and empathetically, and that ends up creating a lot less resistance in the long run, a lot more cooperation as our kids realize that we treat them with respect and we respect their feelings.
And how does that play out when parents say, oh, I know how you feel, and then share their own experience? What do you have to say to that?
Well, I would say, oh, I know how you feel, and sharing your own experience isn't really listening. You know, so
totally agree.
when you know, an empathetic, reflective response is not sharing your own story. And there's great places, plenty of great times to share your own story. That's fine. But you know, if you have a problem with what I'm saying and you don't want to go to grandma's this for our vacation, and I can say, I get it. I imagine it's, you don't want to go. It's like pretty, could be pretty boring for you. I get that. I'm sorry, babe. You know, that's not sharing my experience. That's just reflecting back. You know, it's kind of like we're holding up a mirror and saying, I get you. I see you and I hear you. One of the biggest mistakes parents make is we skip over this piece of acknowledging what's happening for the other person. We want to fix and solve all the problems and just make them all go away. But if we can just take a moment to sit with what's here, oh yeah, this sucks for you. That's like, oh yeah, you hear me, you see me. You know, there's a little bit of understanding and it goes a long way.
And I have noticed with one of my daughters that a lot of her pushback, resistance, friction, anger comes from me inserting myself too much, whether it's in a conversation or deciding I'm going to help her with something, or not even deciding, but just jumping in. And so that's kind of been for a while now, a touchstone for me. And I just kept pulling back and pulling back and pulling back and pulling back, as long as it was not something that was really my job as a parent to do. If it is my job as a parent, she doesn't like it, then I'm going to do it anyway. But just sharing my thoughts or my opinions or my story or seeing that something needs to get taken care of and pointing it out, those types of things are what we're creating a lot of the attitudes and things that we as parents will complain about in our teenagers. So I love that you have for so long been working with parents to teach this way of parenting, of being mindful, of being present, of being there with our kids. And I know that curiosity plays an important role also in this lifestyle and parenting style. So how do you see curiosity being pivotal in this type of relationship building and parenting?
I'm so glad you asked, because curiosity is one of those foundational attitudes of mindfulness. It's the opposite of judgment, right? When we are judging, we've decided ahead of time what something is going to be. You are this. We've applied a label to our kids. And then we don't see what's there because we have decided this is this thing, and we have no curiosity or open-mindedness about what's really there. And the truth about our children and about every single thing in life is that everything is changing all the time in every moment. And that is, of course, the only constant thing in life is change. And our children, and ourselves for that matter, our children are new people all the time, every day. And it's part of our job is to allow them space to be this new person who they are, and if we can bring this attitude of curiosity, and in the mindfulness world we call it beginner's mind. So this idea that I'm not an expert, I'm a beginner, I'm a learner, and can I be curious? Who are you today? Can I bring some of this sense of wonder and open-mindedness to who this person is? And when we do that, we can pull ourselves out of a rut. We can be really present with our kids to who they are. We can discover some things maybe we hadn't seen about them because we were taking shortcuts in our thinking with labeling. It really, and it helps us listen, right? It helps us listen, observe, and step back, like you were talking about, Sandy.
And those are things that I have found that my kids have responded well to, is conversationally, when something comes up, just going, interesting. And even telling them straight out, well, I'm really curious about, you know, fill in the blank. I'm curious what you think about that. I'm curious how you see that. and they start to open up, and you're right, you learn about them and what they're thinking and what they're feeling and so much more than when we just show up and go, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this, and you guys are going to do that. And then, like I said, that creates that friction that you talked about. Mm-hmm. So the curiosity is essential. It is one of our mighty parenting mantras, is to live curious. And that's exactly why I think you hit the nail on the head for what Judy and I had intended as we started Mighty Parenting here. I love this conversation, Hunter. So I just want to go back and touch on a couple points just to kind of remind us and say, you know, as parents, what you've told us that is a good idea to do is to practice mindfulness, to learn to be calm and present in a moment so that we have that available to us anytime, but most especially when we're interacting with the most important people in our lives, and especially when they're pushing our buttons. And that it's okay if they push our buttons. It is a normal human reaction to have an unpleasant response to that. And so we need to be compassionate with ourselves in regards to that. But when something happens in the moment, we can use your name it to tame it strategy and just say straight out what we're feeling. And then also tell ourselves that, you know, I am safe. This is not an emergency. I'm trying to help my child. And to just remind our body that it can switch out of that emergency mode and let our thinking brain come back online. And even if we need to yell, then yell skillfully and just name it. It kind of goes back to the name it and tame it. Mm-hmm. They sort of go together. You don't want to be yelling at your child about something they did. You don't want to make commentary. You just want to yell about what you're feeling, not why. Just, I'm feeling this. And that will help you release that. And again, come get that thinking brain back online.
Sandy, can I share a story of when I had to do that recently?
Yeah.
So, you know, one thinks after a while they've found all your triggers. Mm-hmm. it's amazing what time reveals. But anyway, we had been having a movie night in my house, and my youngest daughter, who is 9, she didn't want to like leave and go to bed, and she was it was frustrating to me, and I was getting annoyed, and then she started laughing at me, and I was like, just like this volcano of rage started like erupting in my system, and I could feel the energy just coming up, and I started to get so frustrated, and you know, of course, all my own gut advice goes out the window for a little while as I'm like, but then I realized I had this incredible energy of anger in my body that I hadn't felt in a long time, and so I stood up and I said, I'm feeling really angry. And I yelled skillfully. And then I walked out the door, and I had to walk up and down the street for a good 15 minutes. And I did some slow walking up and down the street to just release that physical energy of the anger, because there was sort of so much built up in me. I had tried to go after I yelled, I'm feeling really angry, I went outside and I had all this anger in me that I took my library book and I threw it down on the driveway. And then I was like, oh, that wasn't so good. I picked up my library book and I went into the house. I tried to, there are some things you can do, like you can go into a forward fold in yoga or a child's pose to calm down the body. But my body had too much energy coursing through it, so I couldn't do that. And that's when I went and walked up and down the street. And you know, and later in the morning we talked about it, but you know, at the time I look at that and I say, okay, well, that was a pretty darn skillful response. Like I had to yell, and this, you know, volcanic anger was coming up, and I just yelled about my own feelings. There's not a lot to argue with there.
There isn't. And I love that you're sharing that with us and showing us that it really is okay to release that anger. Like the movement, you know, that walking, again, that's pushing out, that's movement out. My daughter goes outside and breaks sticks because we get, you know, all the little branches from the trees. She goes outside and breaks sticks, and just that motion, or throwing something, probably not the library book, but finding something to throw, all of that really helps us, just as crying if you're sad. I mean, our kids can push a button and it's not always anger. Mm-hmm. It can be that they hurt us, that they hurt us more than anybody else. The people we love most have the greatest capacity for that because we care the most about what they think and feel about us. So it's the same with sadness or fear. And fear is like a shiver and shake, and let that out. So, you know, I appreciate you sharing the story and all of these tips and things. And Hunter, you, like us, you have multiple things going on. I know you have a podcast, as we mentioned at the beginning, and your book, Raising Good Humans. Everything is connected through your website. So could you share your website with us?
Sure. You can find everything at mindfulmamamentor.com.
So thank you again, Hunter, for joining us and for sharing all of this. It's really helpful and soothing and inspirational.
Thank you so much, Sandy, for having me. And thank you for doing what you do and sharing. These are such needed conversations. So thank you for providing the platform and for sharing your wisdom with all of us. And thanks for having me on.
And thank you, Mighty Parents, for being here. If you enjoyed the podcast today, if you liked our conversation, if you loved Hunter's tips, please rate, review, and share it. Also, remember that you are a Mighty Parent. If you're here listening to this, you're a Mighty Parent. You got this. And I will see you next week.